Welcome to the DJMCloud.com podcast, episode number 49, with me, Dan McKeown, and with Jessica McKeown.
Hi, everyone.
We're recording this episode number 49 on October 3rd, 2012. As we usually remind you, you can... get the show notes at djmcloud.com, and you can also check out Jessica's site at jessica.sf3am.com. We've been trying out this app called Scape. It generates ambient music with a series of different visual controls that denote musical backgrounds, rules, and moods as set out by the program.
It is really, really, really cool. Very psychedelic. Very cool.
Yeah, you know, one of the people behind it is the famous producer of some U2 and David Bowie albums, and there's a guy called Brian Eno. He also produced James and some other bands. What do you think about James?
I love James. I mean, it was a critical part of my youth, I would say. I don't know, but you know, my late high school, early college.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was cool because everybody knew about Oasis and other bands, and like, not everybody knew the beauty that was James. So it was fun to share that with people.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people remember the songs from 1993 that included Laid and people, I think some people also remember Out to Get You and some of the other songs from that album. There's another album, sort of a follow-up from 1997 called Whiplash. Nobody really remembers Whiplash, do they? This is... That's a really good song, She's a Star, but I don't know, I enjoyed that album, although, you know what it is, it's one of those albums that the first five songs are great, and the rest of the, and then the next six songs are not that good, and they're progressively worse. But the first, it's like one of the better collections of five songs in any album in Britpop.
I think that happens to bands when they get popular and then they're pushed to rush out a really quick follow-up album. They only have a couple of good stuff, and then they kind of make some mediocre stuff, and they're touring and have fans and all that jazz.
What band did that happen to? Lots of bands. Do you think it happened to James?
No, I don't know what happened to James there.
Well, what happened where the... What you said happened?
I don't know.
But do you think that's true about the Red Hot Chili Peppers? They've kind of been in cycles.
Yeah, you know, my music album history isn't as good as it should be.
You have a lot of albums.
I still come from the era of wanting it to be a good album.
Well, yeah, but I mean, five really good songs is pretty good.
Yeah, but remember the days when you loved every single song?
Oh, there are a few albums like that, but even those, like, really go back, there's a couple... There's annoying songs on almost every album. There's, like, you go back and you realize there's no perfect Pearl Jam album. There's Versus and Vitalogy and No Code are all extremely good, but none of them are perfect. No Code may only have a few kind of weak songs, but most of those have they have like really bad songs. This isn't bad. This is another one from that James album. Tomorrow, the album opener. Pretty trippy stuff.
What year?
1997. Timbu and the rest of the band from Manchester formed as Big James fans. It's looking for something to move on to. These are very good songs. I'm telling you that you can get this. The second song, Lost a Friend, the third song, Waltzing Along, both good. And I mean, this is just an excellent album. You can buy singles these days. Buy the first five songs.
What
album, if you want it?
What makes this song so great?
Oh well, at this point, James had a combination of studio skill with acoustic instruments. Like you hear that, right? Like wasn't there probably an acoustic guitar in there?
Mm-hmm.
Brian Eno was producing for him, and they had a certain feel for what they were doing, where they could take a multiple guitar lineup, and you know with add some great deal of kind of kind of mid to higher end rhythm guitar, and then in the first song by James that we were playing, the She's a Star, you hear it. They had added I think because they had a fairly fluid lineup at times, I think that they had added a really good slide guitar player. I don't think one of their guitar players that had been in the band got really good at slide guitar, but either way. So they started adding, like, you know, a lot of studio experience and knowledge. It was 97. This is the same year that Urban Hymns by The Verve came out and some other kind of Britpop classics. And... you know, Ladies and Gentlemen, We're Floating in Space by Spiritualized. So if you look at it in that general milieu, a lot of this Britpop music was hitting a high point of its production and level of innovation around 1997. So it's just an album from a good band during a really heady era in the British, you know, rock music scene. Yeah. There's this second song that you people may not have heard, because again there was that first one we played was a single, but this one is excellent, kind of led in by a bass line. This song, as it goes on, it has very fairly concrete, you know, political commentary kind of lyrics, anti-war stuff.
Is that a bunch of soldiers today?
Were they coming through in like a caravan or something?
Yeah, and they were coming into the Marriott.
Oh, and the Marriott, some convention or something?
I don't know.
Or maybe they're just the caravan was staying at the Marriott.
Yeah, but it was a very interesting and different vibe. There was not a lot of this, we support you. There was a mild, quiet respect, you know, to the valets. We'll get your card right away. Whereas everybody else has to wait 15 minutes. But I remember there used to be a time when people would cheer and clap and hoot and holler, and I think it's just a different time, and you know, the wars are dragging on, and they've been dragging on for a long time, and it's hard to hoot and holler now.
Well, the Afghanistan war, they're talking about ending in 2014, and of course the Iraq war, they're still waging with mercenaries and spies, but it's officially over. So after that, the important anti-war causes to keep the country out of a war with Iran.
I don't know. I feel like we've had more wars in the past 30 years, 40 years.
Well, undeclared wars, CIA-backed coups, guerrilla wars backed by, you know, American money, power, weapons, arms sales. There's all sorts of stuff going on. And then, of course, yeah, the major wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that have dragged on and are maybe slowly giving way. You know, it's really hard to follow what's going on in Afghanistan, but I've seen some indications that Obama planned and even tried an upscaling in the force and the mission, and I think he's apparently been convinced it's a complete disaster, a complete failure, and he wants to withdraw by 2014 now. Whether or not that's really going to happen and what that really means when there probably will be a lot of spies and stuff left around, you know, it's unclear.
How convenient to promise something a year after we vote for him, and then can, once secured, surely say,
well,
situation has changed.
Yeah, that may
care,
be...
Yeah, but I don't alter the deal anymore.
Well, the thing about Barack Obama is that, you know, he seems to like the droning, even if it's American citizens, even if it's just groups of people that they think are vaguely suspicious. Like, this droning thing is unconstitutional. It's horrendous. It needs to be stopped. But to be fair, Obama does not seem to have much of a taste for ground wars. And he seems to want to get out as much as possible out of Afghanistan. And he did, in his first term, effectively get the U.S. out of Iraq, even though really everything had been pretty much already set up to get out. He followed through with it, and even though maybe he had wanted to negotiate a more aggressive status of forces agreement with Iraq, he didn't manage to do it, and he withdrew all the official, you know, ground troops, as it were, even though there's still a lot of embassy staff, you know, like I said, you know, other types of personnel there. But, you know, I mean, what do you think? Like, don't you think Afghanistan has to just be kind of like let go and then, you know, let alone?
I do. And I'm just curious where the attention is going to shift and focus. I mean, is it going to be 4 years of pulling out? You know, is it going to start in 2014? When in 2014? You know, where's the details on what that looks like?
You know, I think that's something I need to do more research on to be able to provide. You remember that time we went to the anti-war protest in 2007?
Do I ever?
Yeah, there were some, like, Brazilian dancers and singers there.
We had our bikes, right?
Yeah, I think we did. In the Mission in San Francisco.
There's always something going on in that park.
Yeah. A lot of protesters there. And, I think it's kind of cool, like, later in this video when you talk, and, yeah, they were standing on the other side by those tents.
I'm here to protest the Iraq War on October
27th, 2007. Yeah, well, it's a cool talk. People should go and check it out. It's on YouTube and it's on our video podcast. So go to pacificpelican.us/podcast. And it's podcast 13, Anti-War Edition. And, you know, it's really cool. It's really inspirational.
Yeah, we have fun living in San Francisco and biking around and going to protests, you know. It was a good time.
Yeah, the war was never popular there. So at the very least, we had that going for us. By the time we moved out to Ohio in 2008, the war was pretty much unpopular everywhere.
Yeah, I remember in March when they had the protests in the street and they had the people blocking the cars and blocking the traffic. And San Francisco was like, stop blocking traffic! And they just, like, didn't get it. They were so... stupid.
A lot of the kind of business type people down by Union Square, right, where
yeah.
the traffic was being stopped, of course, yeah. Yeah.
You can protest, but don't get in my way. And it's like, no, people, we have to get in your way. We have to get your attention. You're just going about your way, ignoring everything, putting your iPod on and walking around the streets and pay attention to what's going on. And that's what I had to come to. And, you know, you see revolutions happen all over the world. People take to the streets and, you know... just sometimes you have to do that.
Yeah, and you remember what happened to some of the people that took to the streets in San Francisco around that time. You remember how there were those anarchist type protesters, and I think based on what I remember, some of the people doing the disruptive downtown San Francisco protests in 2003 were those types of anarchists, kind of, you know, black clad, sometimes mask wearing, like anarchist type protesters.
Mm-hmm.
And those people, actually were protesting when a photographer, videographer, journalist type of guy was doing doing a video, and Josh Wolfe. He was on that Frontline or whatever on PBS, I think, because they were he was imprisoned in a federal prison or something like that because he didn't want to hand over the video because it was supposedly demanded as evidence by a court or something like that, and he didn't want to turn the video over, so he did months and months in a prison, and you know, like, yeah, like that's the way, though, that the kind of environment that was starting to take shape after a while in San Francisco. And I remember, like, Gavin Newsom basically just unilaterally shutting down Halloween festivities. We went down and partied in the Castro. We had few different times down there, and then one time Gavin Newsom said, you know, nobody can go down there for Halloween.
Yeah, but people are going to anyway. And then the big story was that the neighbors who live in the neighborhood wanted to make sure there's porta potties so people weren't shitting and peeing and spilling shit all over their streets.
Yeah, it's always going to be
a
mess.
And so they went out and bought them themselves, I think, because the city said, we're not supporting them, so we're not sending new porta potties. So they went and, you know, those rich Castroites said, fuck it, we don't want shit and piss everywhere tomorrow morning.
I guess Gavin Newsom really thought that he was on the way to becoming the governor of California, and now he thinks he's waiting his turn. But remember, he thought he was on his way up. At Jerry Brown, when we were living in San Francisco, at one point, after Willie Brown was gone, Gavin Newsom was the mayor of San Francisco, and Jerry Brown was the mayor of Oakland. And then somehow, in a primary, Jerry Brown wallops Gavin Newsom.
Yeah.
The mayor of Oakland being the mayor of San Francisco. Like, how does that work, right? I mean, because as a default, you would think the guy that was the mayor of the bigger and, I don't know, you know, much more influential, let's just say, city, San Francisco, you know, would have kind of the inside track on the governor race. But instead, you know, it's the guy who was the mayor of Oakland. And I know he used to be the governor. I think his father was governor before that. But that really isn't – that was a long time ago for today's voter. And the reality was you know, he was coming from a previous job as being the mayor of Oakland, and then, I don't know, maybe attorney general or something in between. But, you know, it's like, isn't that just kind of like an interesting contrast? Like, Gavin Newsom, you know, what happened to him? Do you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't, I don't think it was the scandals. Something just stopped his political rise. Maybe the fact that he wasn't marketable to the state the way he was to a lot of people in the city of San Francisco.
Yeah.
You think that's what happened?
I think so.
Well, because how do you think Gavin Newsom compared to Willie Brown?
Oh, I mean, Willie Brown, he had a legacy, you know? Might not have been the best. I kind of compare him to Bill Clinton.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comparison.
Insane,
things
know?
Went pretty well under him.
Yeah.
It wasn't maybe the most solid of foundations to build on, but it was a pretty, it was a lot that got, you know, seemed to get done economically. You know, like under both of them, you know, in their respective, under their respective watches.
Yeah, he had some questionable moments.
Exactly.
You know?
They both did. They both had
especially
that kind of vibe.
The
yeah.
End.
Absolutely.
And, but then he came back and was, you know, a figure and was just,
yeah.
He was just such a charismatic person. And Gavin Newsom was a pretty boy and came up with horribly named policies about homeless people and, you know, just didn't care. And, you know, I remember when we were at Pluto's
yeah.
And I think it was Matt Gonzalez was walking the streets and Danny Glover.
Yeah.
Was with them. They popped their head in.
When they were running against, that was the mayoral election to succeed Willie Brown. And Gavin Newsom just narrowly beat Gonzalez.
I'm like, what a difference it would have been if we had Matt Gonzalez in there. You know?
Yeah,
like,
a guy who is much more of a kind of a left-leaning guy instead of one of those, I guess, you know, it's interesting that in a way, Gavin Newsom, even though you compare Willie Brown to Bill Clinton, he needed Bill Clinton to bail him out. You know, Bill Clinton came in the night before the election to rally for him.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
I mean, that's a mayoral election. This is a former president coming in. This, the you know, quote-unquote new left really needed him to win in a big city like that. And then, you know, and then what happens, right? Then Jerry Brown ends up becoming the governor, and I think maybe Gavin Newsom's the lieutenant governor. I mean, that's a footnote kind of job. So.
Yeah. And now who's the governor?
Jerry Brown's the governor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And
who's the mayor of San Francisco?
The mayor of San Francisco, I think it might be a guy named Ed Lee, but I'm not really sure. It's a different era in San Francisco though these days for sure. It's one of the former supervisors that's now the mayor.
Ah, I see. Yeah, it was a fun political city. You know, like I guess Cleveland politics have a lot of scandals and.
Well, most cities do, but you're right.
Shenanigans.
Well, there was that big federal investigation into county politics right around when we were moving here in Cuyahoga County.
People going to jail.
Yeah, Jimmy DeMora and people like that. But I do think that every city has a certain amount of corruption and scandal. But it's different in different areas. Like some cities attract a lot of federal attention. That was certainly true in Chicago, too.
Do you think L.A. does?
Well, no, I don't know what the I think for a while LA had to come in and try and the feds had to come in and try to clean up a lot of the LA gang units, right? I think that there are, you know, every city has its issues. Even now the Seattle police are in trouble, you know, for the stuff that they've done, and they have like the feds trying to come in and assert some basic, you know, rules and stuff and try to set things up, a certain way. And, you know, I mean, you gotta watch yourself around police. Remember to consider, you know, the, your Fifth Amendment, right against self-incrimination and your Fourth Amendment right against unreasonable search and seizure. And, you gotta think like that means, you know, you don't have to talk to police. You don't have to consent to search. So, you know, people got to remember that and they got to not leave themselves vulnerable by, you know, allowing police to start their investigation by answering questions to police, right? Got to avoid that.
Yeah, you know, and practice saying it, you know, so you have the confidence should you ever need to say it and stand strong and you're right, you know, and they don't need to, be going looking through your stuff, you know? It's,
no.
Right. So,
that's right.
And they will purposefully push, you know, and go right past your rights. They don't respect them. You know?
No,
so you
no, they don't.
You just gotta be prepared.
Well, I saw this headline about PHP on the site VentureBeat. It says, quote, PHP, the web's most popular programming language, is coming to mobile, unquote. So, you know, I'm a PHP programmer, so I definitely, you know, I'm a fan. I mean, you know, I like doing web development with it.
Yeah.
I think it's a good language. And now, you know, they're trying to hype up the idea that there's going to be, you know, some sort of, you know, use of it on mobile. I don't know. You know, there might be other types of languages that are more popular for mobile. But I could see how, as far as I know, a lot of apps that have web backends use PHP. So I think Instapaper, you know, while it uses Cocoa, Objective-C, you know, native Mac programming for the iPhone and iOS clients, I think it's a PHP backend. And, of course, over time, big sites like that might change to C or other types of, you know, systems or frameworks. But
stability and security?
Yeah, well, yeah, like speed, if you have it pre-compiled. So Facebook uses, I think, still, like, you know, they open sourced like a year ago. They use a variant, their, like, variant of PHP called HipHop, where I guess they, you know, I haven't really dug too far into it because I don't use, you know, that, but I guess what they're doing is they're sort of compiling the PHP. So instead of having it run like an interpreted language, it's gonna be pre-compiled. So because they have such an enormous site, they want it to run fast. But PHP is good to program in. So of course that's becoming a common thing, is that people will write in one language and then use different types of converters to get, you know, to that other type of language. And you know what I mean, what you know, the future holds about the, you know, like, the front end is like, it's like you don't even know what's going on, you know, at the moment. Like, in terms of, you know, have you heard of stuff like CoffeeScript? Mm-hmm. Now, I think, as far as I know, this is basically being, is written, is basically just kind of more or less part of Ruby on Rails, or it works really closely with it. It's like a kind of, I guess, you know, there are these other languages that basically work like JavaScript, but they can either be compiled into JavaScript, or if you have a native platform, they can be run instead of JavaScript. Do you know what I'm saying? So stuff is being written more and more in people's native zone of comfort and then converted into other areas. And this is happening more on the super fast-moving front end than in the slower moving kind of back end areas. But it's a kind of trend that I could easily see, you know what I mean, starting to move into different areas.
Do you think that you can use your PHP skills on the mobile? Do you think they'll be that different?
No, I think mobile websites are great for PHP, but for now, writing native Android or iOS apps are better done with native tools.
Okay.
You've been listening to the DJMCloud.com podcast with me and with Jessica. Thanks so much for joining me again.
Thanks for having me
here. And if you want to listen to other episodes, you can go to the website, DJMCloud.com. And if you want to help promote the podcast, then you know, you send a link out to people, share it on a social site, and if you want to send some feedback to the podcast, well, send it to djmcloud@sf3am.com.